When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
If you're looking for a place where the wide open skies and the towering mountains inspire you to find an untapped part of yourself, you might want to take a trip to Wyoming. It's a place where bold, curious spirits forge their own way on all types of adventures. There is no shortage of iconic, expansive landscapes out there. You can discover breathtaking hikes, stunning state parks, authentic Western culture, and other historic sites, along with the tales of famous outlaws like Butch Cassidy and pioneers like Buffalo Bill Cody. The truth lies west. Discover yours at travelwyoming.com.
Tell me about Hotel Imperial.
The Hotel Imperial is on the fanciest street in Vienna, so the Ringstrasse, and it's still one of the fanciest hotels in town. And Vienna, in general, is a place, and this is true of it now as well as then, Vienna had an aroma of conspiracy about it. It was a place where there were a lot of down and outs, Hitler among them. And of course, for the aspiring journalist, this was the place to be. This is where you could pick up the latest hot gossip from the Romanian court, which was full of all sorts of intrigue. And there was a mirror right above the banquette where you could see who was coming in and figure out whether they were going to come and try to pitch you a story. It was like living in the middle of a detective novel where you had to figure out what everyone's investment was in the rumor or story that they were peddling.
I'm Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Today, I'm talking to author and historian Deborah Cohen about her book, Last Call at Hotel Imperial, The Reporters Who Took on a World at War. It's the story of these foreign correspondents, the kind of classic reporter, little pork pie hat, notebook, who were in Europe at one of its most important moments, this pre-World War II period. They talked to folks like Gandhi, Mussolini, Hitler, before the major world events happened. And for Deborah, the story of these foreign correspondents all starts with a guy named John Gunther.
Actually, you know where I am? I'm on Wellington Avenue, which is right down the street from John Gunther's boyhood home.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Close to the story, close to the origin.
Growing up, Deborah loved John Gunther's book, Death Be Not Proud. It was published in 1949 and is this really stark depiction of grief and illness. It's all about the death of John's son. It was pretty taboo-breaking at the time it came out. Deborah was really captivated by John. She researched him obsessively. And as she read his countless articles, letters, unpublished short stories, she found that John was part of a small group of influential foreign correspondents in the 1920s and 30s. And these correspondents shared similar interests with John. They argued about everything: war, sex, love. And most importantly, they were responsible for warning the world about this increasing rise of dictatorship. This all led Deborah to write her book, Last Call at Hotel Imperial. This is the hotel that these foreign correspondents lived in and drank at and fought at. The book, which Deborah will take us through in a second, is this peek into the personal lives of these larger-than-life characters. And we begin with this character that started it all, the legendary journalist John Gunther.
So John Gunther washes up in Vienna as a very young man, and he is some combination between extremely naive and wise beyond his years. So in 1926, he writes to a would-be girlfriend, back in the U.S. And he says, you know, people are saying that this is the time for democracy, but I actually think it's going to be the world of the dictatorships. And mind you, this is 1926, so he's incredibly farsighted.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, the rise of the dictatorships, I'm going to pitch a story on that. Ho, ho, ho. But he's naive because fundamentally he's a Chicago boy. He has all of that sort of American optimism and can-do attitude. So he had that kind of, you know, he is really an American. And just to describe him, he's tall, he's handsome, more than 6 feet tall, blonde, blue-eyed. He has a kind of a Germanic look about him. Mm-hmm. So he's oftentimes taken to be a German. His German is not actually all that good, but he scrapes by.
John doesn't get to Vienna until 1929, fresh from a stint in London and other European capitals. And when he lands in Austria, it is pretty clear that Vienna is a very interesting place to be.
And he comes into this, you know, amazingly fertile newspaper scenes. So at the Hotel Imperial, for instance, there would be 60 newspapers on the racks every morning for you to choose from. And that would include a Cairo paper that is printed in English, as well as, you know, world papers from across the globe, and then, you know, plenty of Austrian papers. He also comes, of course, at the beginning of what will become the Great Depression.
Right.
And he himself gets involved in that story because he reports on the collapse of the Austrian bank, the Kreditanstalt, which in a sense is a trigger for the widening of the Great Depression.
Part of what's great about this story and his character, this is the true, like, romantic ideal of being a reporter, traveling on train to this some crazy event, some revolution happening, showing up with your crumpled hat and your notebook and writing down what you see. Like, he's that guy. Like, he's really doing it.
Oh, completely. Yes. It's the fedora. It's the romance of the American who goes where he pleases. He's got a boss, but of course the editor is so far away.
Yeah.
And you are really not supposed to be sending any telegrams unless it's truly breaking news. And so part of his time is spent in writing what are referred to as mailers, meaning long pieces that you put into the mail. And Gunther, because he wants to be a novelist, has this really finely grained sense about character. He's really interested in the atmospheric detail. Mm. And so these mailers are amazing. I mean, you find out so many things that I, as a historian, it made it feel as if it's like going from looking at a world in black and white to looking at it in Technicolor to read these descriptions. So he says, oh, those Austrian horses, the pampered Austrian horses are fed asparagus. I believe that. And he says, you never get a bank statement from a bank in Austria because they're too disorganized to produce them. With a description like, what's Vienna like? He describes going to a former kind of imperial nobility toy store, like the place where you would go and buy birthday presents for pint-sized countesses. And the whole store is dark because they can't afford to put on the lights. And so if you go to the store, they turn on the lights section by section so they can show you the wares.
Well, and John had a little bit of an unusual reporting style, too, because John, he has a quote where he basically says, like, I didn't care about the big scoop. I told human stories. I wasn't trying to beat the newswire by 6 minutes or whatever. So maybe talk a little bit about his weird reporting style, because he did some stuff that was, like, really interesting, but not necessarily what you think of when you think of, like, a foreign correspondent sending back reports.
John Gunther, early on, realized that his strength was character and atmosphere. So Gunther, for instance, is the kind of reporter who, writing about the Blitz, says the whole street smelled like perfume bottles, like perfume because all the bottles were had been broken.
Mm.
And that's the kind of thing that you wouldn't have imagined.
Yeah.
You know, you think, you know, smells like smoke, charred, dead bodies,
right,
whatever. No, perfume bottles. So he writes a personalistic, character-driven journalism. And the style is perfectly matched to the problem of interwar years of the 20s and 30s, which is the ascendancy of these titanic world historical figures. So to focus on personalities, when you're dealing with a Hitler or a Mussolini or a Stalin or arguably a Nehru or a Gandhi, makes perfect sense. Because how do you explain the world without them? So all of these journalists are fascinated by the role of the individual in shifting history. But it's Gunther who really makes a career out of this.
John stayed in Vienna until 1935. And in 1936, he publishes his big seminal book called Inside Europe. It's this really prophetic book about what is going to come in Europe. This is the book that is often credited with making people terrified of the coming war. And in the book, John doesn't just sort of objectively relay events. He goes deep into personalities of the people trying to take control of Europe.
And the way that he describes those personalities is essentially in a kind of Freudian way. So, for instance, he goes to, in order to explain what makes Hitler tick, he goes and interviews Hitler's relatives and writes pieces about it. And he doesn't quite know yet why he's doing this. This is in the summer of 1933.
Right. This is quite early, and really, in a way, it's quite early in the arc of what will happen.
Exactly. Exactly. He knows it is important, though, that these are very perverse personalities.
Yeah.
Like, there is something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And he is himself in psychoanalysis, and he wants to figure it out. What is wrong with them?
3 years after John's book was published, World War II broke out. Of course, John was not the only reporter spending his time analyzing the personalities of Europe's biggest political players and reporting the fast-breaking events. When we get back, we're going to meet the other players, the other reporters who set up shop at Hotel Imperial, the people that John was drinking with, fighting with, becoming intimate with. And we're going to hear how they influenced American public opinion at this crucial moment in history and about why Hitler himself held a legendary grudge against the Hotel Imperial. More after this.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Let's place our cast into the hotel for a second. So who are some of these other people?
Yeah, so the Hotel Imperial was the place where foreign reporters would hang out in the morning and gather up stories and kind of hang out and eat breakfast and gossip with each other. So there was a Hungarian reporter named Marcel Fodor who actually worked for the English paper, the Manchester Guardian. And he had been interned in Britain during the First World War as an enemy alien, but he'd learned good English. And so he comes back after the war and sets up shop in Vienna, where essentially he becomes the guy who takes care of all the foreign journalists and other foreign visitors, including William Fulbright, So among other people who would pop up at the Hotel Imperial would be the politician, Engelbert Dollfuss. So Dollfuss, who was barely 5 feet tall, was what was referred to at the time as an Austro-fascist. He was vehemently anti-socialist, but he was also vehemently anti-Nazi. And the reporters had all sorts of jokes about him. So jokes about how Dollfuss got himself mailed in an envelope to Mussolini because he was such a petite little character. So another person who would be there at the Hotel Imperial was Dorothy Thompson. Dorothy Thompson was the first American woman to run a major overseas news bureau. She goes on to be one of the most important anti-Nazi campaigners of the later 1930s. She's writing to an audience of 8 to 10 million people thrice weekly in her syndicated columns.
Okay, so you have these characters, you have reporters there, you have politicians, people with various agendas. What happened at this hotel that made all these people famous?
Well, these American reporters were the people who essentially warned the world about the dangers of fascism. So they were the people who were prophesying the war. They were the people saying, look out, these people are dangerous. They were the people who were wondering why it was that Europe was run by a bunch of doddering septuagenarians. Sound familiar?
Unfortunately, it does.
One of them was that story, warning the world. And they interviewed Mussolini. They interviewed Hitler. They interviewed Dollfuss, of course, and lots of other tin pot dictators, and we don't know. John Gunther interviewed the worldwide prophet of revolution, Leon Trotsky. He found him in exile off the coast of Istanbul, Constantinople. The second big story they have is they're tracking the rise of anti-colonial nationalism. Mm. So the attacks on the great tottering European empires of the British and the French, especially. So John Gunther also interviews Gandhi. He interviews Nehru. He sees everyone who is anyone. Chiang Kai-shek. He sees everyone who is anyone in that kind of anti-colonial world.
Why was this such a powerful position in the 1930s? And how did they have access to such a wide sort of audience?
Yeah, so American foreign correspondents, if we think about who are the most important and powerful and influential foreign correspondents of this era, it is 100% the Americans. Mm. And that is for a few reasons. One of them is that they are able to report in an unfettered way. So unlike in the Soviet press or the Austrian press or the Italian press that have been shut down by dictatorial regimes, the Americans have a free hand. Also, unlike the democratic countries, the British or the French, they are not subject to censorship regimes. So they are also, in comparative terms to the Europeans, they are rich. The dollar is going much further. They are well-funded. So one of Gunther's friends who goes to report on the war in Ethiopia in 1935 has an expense account of essentially today $70,000 a month. And this is in Addis Ababa. Yeah. So a ton of money.
Man, I wish I was in media about 100 years ago. Let's talk about some of the relationships between these journalists. Were they friends? Were they enemies? Were they lovers? Were they getting a drink at the bar together?
All of the above.
Yes.
So they are friends. They are rivalrous. Hmm. Sometimes they sleep with each other. They have an ongoing debate about what the purpose of journalism is. They don't always agree. I mean, most of them are kind of on the, you could call them on the liberal spectrum, kind of liberal to socialist, but there's some conservative ones in there as well. And so at the heart of my book is a set of people, John Gunther and his wife, Dorothy Thompson, a guy named H.R. Knickerbocker, who's a Texan, who is more on the conservative side and interviews Mussolini four times, and a man named Vincent Sheehan, who writes the really important, I mean, arguably style-setting memoir of the 1930s, a book published in 1935 called Personal History. And so this crowd is, you know, that's the kind of core of the crowd. When you're in the middle of their correspondence, first of all, they just absolutely come alive, partly because they're trying to figure things out. And because we live in a moment where the question of the future, like, what is the future going to be like? How can anyone not think about that? There's something especially compelling about those voices.
Do you think they made a difference? Do you think the work that they did during this time at Hotel Imperial, John Gunther, other reporters, do you think it changed anything, or did it just help people understand what was going on? What was the impact of this period and their contributions?
I think it did actually change public opinion. So they stood as eventually very lyrical exponents of the need of Americans to get involved. And so when we're trying to understand, you know, the ebbing of isolationist sentiments, the ground in many ways is prepared through books like Inside Europe, Personal History. These are selling in the millions, Dorothy Thompson's columns. Beyond that, I think they have a really significant influence in creating a sort of new journalism before the new journalism, and a new memoir form coming out of the 1930s that we think is a relatively recent phenomenon, but is in fact the sort of tell-all memoir bearing your personal life and your trauma, your turmoil, that comes out of the 1930s.
Yeah. Why title the book Last Call at Hotel Imperial?
People went to Vienna before the annexation of Austria had happened in 1938. They started to understand that it would happen, that in a sense, that was the path, that was what was going to happen. And so they start to pay their last calls. So they go for the music, they go to visit friends, they go to stay at the Hotel Imperial. They know that they are bearing witness to the end of a world, an end of a time. And when the annexation happens, when the Nazi tanks roll into Austria, the first place that Hitler comes, the place where he sets up his headquarters, is actually the Hotel Imperial as well. Because as a young man, homeless and destitute, he's earned some pennies shoveling snow in front of the Hotel Imperial by lore. And he was disregarded by the hotel management. He was not even offered a cup of hot coffee, amidst the snowstorms where he was shoveling the snow.
Did you go to the Hotel Imperial while you were
Absolutely.
Working on this?
Yes. I mean, my goodness, that would be practically, I don't know, malpractice.
Yes, this turned into malpractice.
No, I went to many, many places in the book just because it makes a difference to see them.
Yeah. How was it? What was your experience just personally at the hotel? Did you feel like you could kind of tap into the sense of their time there?
In a sense, I could, but only because I had read the reportage.
Right.
So if I just walked in, it would just be one nice, you know, luxury hotel, very expensive.
Yeah.
And even other parts of Vienna, I would say. So the main telegraph, the old telegraph, central telegraph and telephone office. That actually gave me chills because you think about all the stories that were wired back from there.
When people read this book today, which is about the events of 100-ish years ago, what do you hope they come away with?
First of all, an admiration for the struggles and the work of these journalists and journalists in general. Second, we tell this history in retrospect as if it was destined to be this way and to capture some of the immediacy and the choices and the contingency of that moment. And also to see that things that we don't necessarily put in the same frame are happening. and influencing each other. So, you know, the rise of fascism, but also anti-colonial nationalism, mm-hmm. and also psychoanalysis, and also new ways of trying to convey the world. I mean, what strikes you when you read them is they feel really modern, and they let you have access to their thoughts.
Well, thank you so much. What a fascinating set of characters, time period, subject. It's been a joy to talk to you about it.
I am so, so grateful for these great questions and for, you know, just the chance to talk to you about it.
Of course. Thank you.
That was Debra Cohen, author of Last Call at Hotel Imperial. It is a great book. You should pick it up if you're interested in these subjects at all. Today, you can go and stay at the Hotel Imperial if you want. It remains one of the most luxurious hotels in Vienna. It's not cheap to stay, but it is very fancy. And when you go there, you can go and sidle up to the bar, order a drink, and say hello to your fellow neighbors at the bar. You never know. They might just be an iconic journalist. This episode was produced by
Manolo Morales.
Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Johanna Mayer,
Baudelaire,
Gabby Gladney.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
And our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I will see you next time.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
The world isn't wide enough for those with an insatiable desire for discovery. The all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid SUV offers the power and freedom to explore further and deeper than ever before. Intuitive, smart features ensure that you're always connected to the road ahead. Inside, a thoughtfully designed cabin immerses you in a universe that is all your own. The larger-than-life panoramic display spans the entire width of the cabin. It's customizable and interactive. Drivers can even personalize their backgrounds with a series of nature-inspired themes. This vehicle signals the arrival of an exciting new chapter for Lincoln. Discover more about the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus at Lincoln.com.